War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It's 14 November, the year of our Lord, 2019. You're listening to episode 28. We're here in the Breitbart Embassy with Raheem Kassam, Nigel Farage's wingman, with UKIP and the Brexit vote. Raheem, actually, I did some English radio today, this morning. You guys have a deal. At 4 o'clock this afternoon, they're going to make a deal between Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage. We'll talk about that maybe if we do the afternoon show today. Jason Miller, communications chief strategist in the Trump 2016 campaign and during the transition. And we're very honored to be joined by Senator Mike Braun, who is not just MAGA, but outside the permanent political class. So for the first senator we're honored to have in the war room, we wanted to have somebody that is very Trumpian in his directional, we've got to come to change this up. A big announcement we want to make, and we're going to have more later in the show about this, the Salem Radio Network has partnered with the John Fredericks Radio Network, and we're going to be launching nationwide on Salem at 9 p.m. We're going to take the morning show and rebroadcast it at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. More details on that. We also have many more big radio stations throughout the country that are coming in. We'll have more about that. The John Fredericks Radio Network doing a terrific job. We're up on iTunes. We're up on Stitcher. The reviews have been outstanding. We're here 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. And this is to give you information. We're not trying to spin you. We're not trying to give you opinion. We're not trying to give you an angle of attack here. We're trying to get to the grassroots and also to Democrats and independents throughout the nation so that you can get past the media buzz, get past the spin, get right into what the facts are. We deconstruct the testimony. We talk about the witnesses, and we let you see it like yesterday. Go at it. First, when we get about Senator Braun, we're going to play a clip in a second. But Senator Braun, the Hoosiers are known as being practical, pragmatic, salt-of-the-earth folks. When they sent you here outside the political class, in both your primary and the general election, what did they send you to Washington, D.C. to accomplish?
So I come truly from Main Street America, moved back to my hometown after getting educated. Smartest decision my wife and I ever made.
We have another Harvard Business School grad here. You got your union
saw
card.
The light. Saw the light.
2 years in Cambridge, you want to get back to the Hoosiers.
I got back to the real world. So when I watched what occurred in 2016, remember when Trump came onto the stage, and of course this looked like for the Democrats it was a slam dunk for Hillary Clinton, and I looked at the array of candidates that looked like maybe Clinton light or something, and there was no one, in my opinion, that was going to beat Hillary Clinton. And when I saw that whole thing evolve, I perked up. Moving back to my hometown, I invested in real estate over the years, 100 acres, and built it into a farm and timber business. And in the rural counties, when I started seeing Trump signs sprout, it was amazing. In places that didn't have high incomes, that told me that something real is happening.
You know, the Clinton campaign and Morning Joe specifically used to mock us about the sign. The yard signs were so old school, and I kept saying to him, it's psychological warfare. Just get them out everywhere.
That's
right?
Campaign 101. Yeah. And in places where they're maybe not paying attention to the mainstream media, the signs popping up, hey, my neighbor, something's going on.
It's validation.
Exactly. So for me, I'll never forget election night. I watched it until about a quarter after two. I heard there was problems in the Philadelphia suburbs. Thought, well, that's going to drag on through the evening. Went to bed. I get up early, go to bed late every night, every day. And I'll never forget turning on the TV, President Trump elect. I was like a kid in the living room. My wife, you know, likes to sleep in a little later. I was not going to just jump up and down and holler myself. I got her, and we hugged. So that was when I was just second year as a state legislator. I was just happy as an armchair politician, a citizen, a Hoosier, that looks like the dynamic has changed. So I watched, didn't finish out my second term, and saw what happened in his first term, culminating with the most transformational legislation, when you actually gave Main Street entrepreneurs a lower tax burden. I said, this is for real.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at, you know, trying to be a part of it, and kick the tires in the summer of 17, ended up declaring, ran against two congressmen from, I call it the farm system of politics. That's the way you normally become a senator. You become a congressman for 8 to 10 years, parlay all that into a Senate bid. Started off with 1% in the first public opinion poll. I've always loved outmaneuvering the big corporations I've competed with in my own markets. I said, this is a chance if you want to really weigh in to do it. And my wife, my friends, my family thought it was a fool's errand, in the sense that it really hadn't been done before, and we did it. So
you came here, dripping jersey. You came here with a set of things that the Hoosier state, the Hoosiers want you to focus on. You're here, and now we're in one of the most historic events in American political history. But kind of off message for the work of the country, whether it's infrastructure, Chinese deal, USMCA, all these massive trade deals, the reorganization, not that the tax bill was to unlock the animal spirits and empower entrepreneurs. This is now to get all the trade deals right, start with USMCA. Is that what are folks, is this why you came here, is to focus on this?
That's the frustrating part. I tell people, coming from where I did, building a company basically without a board of directors, every hour is important, and you're always trying to move things in a way that you can measure the results. Here, it's like you have to slow your metabolism down due to the institutional inertia, and that's the frustrating part. But I'm a big believer in term limits. I'm going to give it my all for one or two terms, and then I'm going to get back to where I came from. And in the process, I've got probably more fingerprints on some of the health legislation. The healthcare industry is to blame. It's made up of huge corporations that have kind of gotten in cahoots.
Is this the
with
opportunity
government.
Cost? And we're getting into, you've been one of the most vocal senators, but is this the, people don't realize this. This, the whole town is now galvanized, and now they brought in the nation with the broadcast TV yesterday on the impeachment process. The opportunity cost is, like you said, we're burning daylight, right? Every hour counts. You got USMCA is not going to be dealt with. You got the Chinese, the Hong Kong legislation the House passed is sitting up there in the Senate. Things are not moving forward because the entire system is locked up.
And that's not what I got all dressed up for, spent a lot of time and treasure in the primary to get here. That was all interesting and neat. Once I got here, I wanted to weigh in on that stuff. And that's the political calculation that I think most smart individuals in Indiana, throughout the heartland, and even in the purple states are going to calculate. And I think Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer stuck their necks out trying to push this along.
So, Senator, and when you say treasure, that's code for TV ads, folks, because they ain't cheap even in Indiana. But look, I want to get right to the point here. From, as Steve said, Indiana, very practical. Yeah. Folks are hardworking. Yeah. They want you to go and do your job.
Common sense.
You know, get your job done. So we saw yesterday's circus, the beginning of it, is we had former White House Cabinet Secretary Bill McGinley on yesterday, and he called it yesterday was the first round of the war of attrition. So you're in the Senate. Why is it so hard for Republican U.S. senators, besides yourself and a couple of others, to actually get out there and defend President Trump? And that's why we wanted to have you on, because
it's been crickets.
It's been crickets. I mean, we're so glad that you're taking a forefront of this. Why are so many other folks chicken to follow your leadership here?
Because in many cases, they were disrupted when Trump came along. And from the get-go, there was a large segment of our party that didn't like an outsider, didn't like the fact that when you get here, it's so easy to nestle in. Forget about what you said on the campaign trail, forget about your roots, and you become part of the system. So I think that's the kind of pervasive feeling, even in our own conference, that you then speak up selectively and you don't do it comprehensively, and you don't do it from your core philosophy, which I did when I decided to run in the first place.
But we see certain senators take this position of, well, we're the jury. We're going to be the jury. We can't say anything. We must be very genteel. We must be delicate. Must not make sure that the cup hits the saucer too loudly when we're sipping on our tea. That's, I mean, personally, I believe that's a bunch of junk. We see the Democrats out there saying, impeach Trump, he's terrible.
Right.
Why? Tell us what your thoughts are on that.
So you've got three approaches. You've got, I'm a juror, I'm going to be quiet, I want to see how things transpire. Number two, you talk about the process. The process is corrupt. I mean, it goes back to the roots of when President Trump got elected originally. And then you can talk about the pure merits of the case. And when you're doing that, that kind of tells you where you're at in terms of a believer in the system as it existed before, which many in our party fit into that category. Then you've got that center group, and then you've got guys like me that came here not calculating what you say,
get things
based
done
upon trying to get reelected or a campaign check. That's the feeling of freedom and the fun I'm having being here.
Why don't you hold on? We're honored to have Senator Mike Braun from the great state of Indiana, the Hoosier State. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll return with War Room Impeachment in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. We're in the Breitbart Embassy. Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller. We're honored to have Senator Mike Braun coming up after our break at the bottom of the hour. Matt Gaetz, yes, the young firebrand strategist, is in the house. We're honored today to have Senator Braun with us, and Matt Gaetz is going to join us afterwards. A 1-2 punch of very Trumpian figures. Senator Braun, yesterday, you and I have gone through these newspapers, the mainstream media, you know, the Trump, all the evidence against him. You saw it on television yesterday as the people in the great Hoosier states. How did it play out there in the heartland of this country?
Well, number one, I think this was a gamble on the part of the Democrats to introduce it publicly when some have been paying attention, and I think this is when kind of the average user will be sitting down trying to assess how things are going. They're not going to be watching it and recording it, but they're going to be looking at the main clips of it, because I think they also know the context within which this whole thing's been conducted. But my assessment is that when you went public, it was to try to focus group your way further into a conclusion. And that's been occurring since the Mueller report flopped. And I think they calculated we've got to latch on to the next best thing with the time we've got available to build the case into the election November of 2020. And I think yesterday, finally, when we get to counterpunch, and I thought we did an excellent job, I think it was a bad day for the Democrats.
Pelosi, what did you think was bad about it?
I think that it, first of all, beyond just the selective leaks, information that they've been dishing out, it is now the counterpoint. And I think we did well. From Jordan to Meadows to the attorney, the whole process. And the rise in public opinion for impeachment and removal stopped about 2 to 3 weeks ago. It is.
You mean the high water mark was?
I think that's why
kind of randomly timed when Matt Gaetz went down to the secret star chamber and let the nation know what was going on.
Exactly.
That's what you need. Leadership. You need people. You need killers. That's what you need here.
And I sense among the folks that have been pushing this that they are scrambling right now, because yesterday was the beginning of our making the case.
Tell us about that. You think Pelosi had a bad day?
I think she had a bad day. And I think that the every day going forward, since we can ask questions like you would in any other kind of trial, so to speak, or inquiry, their case starts to weaken.
Yeah, so Senator, I want to get into that, because one of the things we do here on War Room Impeachment is we're looking ahead. We're trying to be telling folks what's coming up 1, 2, 3 weeks down the road. This thing is going to go from the House circus to a Senate trial. And there we saw Senator Burr, Republican chairman of the Senate Intel Committee, say the other day that this trial could go on for 6 to 8 weeks, that it could be literally that long. saw you've recently been quoted in your thoughts on a trial. A lot of mega Trump supporters say, you know what, we have the majority in the Senate. Let's go and dismiss this thing. Let's throw it out. It's completely bunk, unfair process. You said no, because we have to go and actually clear President Trump. Flesh that out. Give us your thoughts on why you're so adamant about that.
So what'll happen if we try to dispatch it early is it'll give them, even in the process of where they're going to lose it anyway, the ability to come back and talk about the fact that it didn't have its full litigation in the Senate. With all the information we've got, we need also the ability to, through that process, drive home what we've started to do here in the House. I think it's inevitable that they're going to come up with an article of impeachment. It's going to come to the Senate. And I think that timetable is right. I think we'll probably get that before Christmas. And based on what happened back in the Clinton proceedings, 6 to 8 weeks could be. But the thing that we do have available after we have the chance to litigate it even further, to drive the case home, is the ability to move to a vote. That will be how we can modulate the time frame. If we try to dismiss it out of the gate, we're going to leave enough scrap there to where they'll hang on to it and say that we thwarted the process.
Do you think that they'll try to use, though, the having had a chance for before Gates went down and broke the fever, as I call it, they had 6 weeks or 5 weeks. You could see the polling change of just unlimited shots on goal. Now we've got the public hearing, but you see with this nonsense in the mainstream media, another chance to smear him. Are you concerned about using that trial as another circus to try to smear him that's going right into the primary system and right into 2020?
Well, first of all, I think that's going to be inevitable, so we're going to have to deal with it. Then it's just simply a question, do you try to dismiss it early? Or if you think the case is moving in our direction, which I think it clearly is, the fact that we actually can cross-examine, we can further drive home what is started here yesterday, then it's a question of when do you make the motion to bring it to a vote? And I think that's the tool we have, so it isn't belabored to where that would happen.
Give us the new information that you're breaking that came out this morning. There's some new information additionally coming out of the Ukraine. Right?
Yeah, so for everyone who's listening, breaking news this morning that the Ukraine's foreign minister said that U.S. Ambassador Gordon Sondland, of course, U.S. Ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, whose name came up quite a bit yesterday, did not explicitly link military aid to Kiev with opening an investigation into Joe Biden or Hunter Biden. So this is
another
so
fact.
we have President Zelensky.
I hate facts.
Yeah, we have everybody in Ukraine saying that no, there was not some quid pro quo. There was no coercion or threat. There was none of this. So this is really just living in Adam Schiff's head.
So you're making the case that, like the president is, the more substance, the more granularity, the more you have witnesses, the more you can cross them, right? And we need more killers up there to do that. We need Lee Zeldin. We need Meadows. We need Congressman Gates. We need more killers up to do that. But the more you get into this in granular and details, help the president. So your philosophy is kind of ours, the president is. He did nothing wrong. Call was fine. Let's get to the details. It's all about a foreign policy dispute between Hillary Clinton. And by the way, she's in London the other day talking about, hey, Brexit, you know, you still have a time to unwind Brexit. It's that permanent political class, party of Davos, that you saw so much at Harvard Business School. But there's a more subtle approach coming out from Congress, talking about intent, talking about, oh, maybe it wasn't great. But where do you come out in this? And particularly after seeing two of their best shots yesterday, are you in the camp of, hey, the hill we're going to fight on is this hill of substance, nothing wrong, this is a debate about American first national security policy? Or do you admit it and try to take some legal argument?
So they've been trying to build their case from November of 2016. So they've been at it for a long time.
The nullification project.
Yes. And they've surged and then ebbed. And if we don't take advantage now to drive home with simple approach that this was a miscalculated effort in the first place to try to delegitimize the election in November of 2016, we are losing the opportunity, because We don't need to belabor it. We started yesterday with debunking it, and I think they now are wondering how long they want to do it, because I think it's a careful balance here. If we try to shortcut the process, we could lose the opportunity of slam dunking the case.
An American hero, Senator Mike Braun, who in the teeth of the loss in the House in 2018 stood tall and won in Indiana. Senator Braun, thank you so much for being here. We want you back on War Room Impeachment. War Room Impeachment, take a short commercial break, pay some bills. Matt Gaetz is in the House. The firebrand's going to join us momentarily.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam from UKIP, and Jason Miller, the great communication strategist for the Trump 16 and transition. Want to make an announcement. We're on the John Fredericks Radio Network live from right behind the Supreme Court on Capitol Hill every morning, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every day until the day after Donald J. Trump is acquitted in this impeachment fiasco. We're here to get
And Miller's not going to shave until then.
I shaved yesterday. You see, Gates pisses stuff
off. This is my acquittal beard.
We're now honored to have Senator Braun backed this up. He said, hey, in the Hoosier, he could tell that it was 3 weeks ago when this thing kind of reached the high tide. That was the day. Give us your thoughts quickly. How did you conceive of that? Why did you do it? And do you see it as an inflection point when you went down to Schiff's star chamber?
This is all informed by Russia. In the Russia investigation, we had an open process that allowed Republicans to expose the lie for what it was, and we saw the Democrats take a change in strategy. They believed in Russia. The more they pushed information out, the more successful they would be, and they totally did a 180 and tried to draw all the information in. And I got to tell you, Steve, after watching yesterday, I know why they were trying to keep these hearings behind closed doors. They're not that compelling. My major takeaway is that they devolved into a policy dispute about how to make Ukraine great again. You know, and most Americans are watching this saying, well, one group of people wanted to send MREs and blankets. One wanted to send guns. They all want Ukraine to either post up on Russia or work with Russia on terrorism. And if you're trying to figure out how to pay your healthcare premium, if you're wondering why the road you're on the way to work has got too many potholes in it, if you're concerned about the quality of your kids' schools and the safety of your streets, sort of the inner connectivity of the Crimea invasion and the war in eastern Ukraine seems like a very distant thing to your life. And I think that as we continue to see the market hit record highs, people are seeing their 401ks get stronger, it shows the absurdity of this process. But going down there to that bunker basement where Adam Schiff was holed up with his evidence was important, because only after that moment did we start to see public polling show that half the country or more believes this to be an illegitimate process. It put us on the best possible footing for yesterday, where I think we had very effective advocacy from Jim Jordan and John Ratcliffe and a number of other of our members.
And Congressman, to add on to what you're saying, when we're talking about these, the Ukraine first, as we're talking about Taylor and Kent talking about what their worldview is, this isn't anything that we're pushing them into. Literally, in their opening statements, they're into their worldviews on the EU, into NATO, into Russia. And when they're talking about, it's not U.S. policy, they're talking about my policy. Or when they say our policy, they're talking about themselves, Taylor and Kent. How big of a misstep was this for Pelosi and Schiff to put these two out first? And how does that set the stage for Yovanovitch or even the eight public testimonies next week?
Well, Nancy Pelosi is not an unskilled tactician. Right. And everyone knows you put your best evidence first. And so this was their best evidence. And I think that if Pelosi has an Achilles heel strategically, it's that she has become so a part of permanent Washington that she has a blind eye for these people who portray to regular Americans as just the epitome of permanent Washington.
But part of this also is fighting back and standing up. She ran the tables from the day she announced that on September 24th until Meadows said the day before you came on that, hey, it was, I've sat some 70 hours and nothing there. Then you did the event that broke the fever. This is the first we've been, she called an audible, and then you're seeing pushback. You're seeing Jordan, you're seeing guys like yourself. When you fight back and just don't stand there and let it happen, that's when you see her, all of a sudden, they start blinking.
And too often, folks on the right have been content to sort of win the battle of ideas but lose the fight for the soul of the country. And that's why I think the Trump movement animates a different element of what we can do to be successful and productive. public hearings also provide a unique opportunity for us to all sort of get on the same page with the same facts. When you've got Adam Schiff holed up in a bunker, leaking out an opening statement here, a response there, the Democrats are all able to sing out of the same hymnal. Meanwhile, we're getting fragments of information thrown at us. Now, this podcast has been a big part of synthesizing that information, bringing it together. And one thing that I'm not sure you guys are aware of, obviously, you know, one of the constituencies for this podcast are policymakers, obviously reporters, but increasingly I'm hearing from political consultants that advise on both Republican and Democratic campaigns that if the themes you are developing here play out on the campaign trail, then Democrats are up for a bloodbath in the next election with Donald Trump on the ballot. So congrats for that. You're not exactly the group that you bring happening. Home to mom, but you know, you're the group to go to war with.
You said you wanted the killers, right?
There's something, I got to raise my hand to jump in here. There's something interesting happening on the televisions in front of us as this happens. Not the adverts, of course, that are going on right now, commercials.
You're going to save on health insurance,
right? But it's the fact that they're already pivoting to tomorrow. They're no longer talking about yesterday.
Yeah,
and that's what tells you that yesterday was a dud for them. No matter how much they tried to spin it, Business Insider and Politico and all these guys, bombshell, bombshell, it ain't a bombshell if CNN isn't leading with it the next morning, correct?
Sure, and they have to say bombshell for the sake of clicks, but the best way to analyze, if you don't watch any of the hearings, you're a regular American, you want to know who won or lost, watch the body language at the post-game press conferences from yesterday. You have Jim Jordan out there laying out our case in a succinct and concise way, you know, that these are folks who simply had a disagreement with the president but couldn't justify impeachment, and you watch the Adam Schiff press conference, and they all look like they're lined up in a funeral procession.
We're going to take a short commercial break. We've got Senator, Congressman Mike Gates, or Speaker, Gates, Matt Gates.
I don't want any of
those Speaker
jobs.
Matt Gates here. We're going to take a short commercial break. Speaker Gates will return in a moment. Welcome back to Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, the basement of the Breitbart Embassy. It is War Room Impeachment, episode 28. We're honored to be joined by the young firebrand and strategist, Congressman Matt Gates. You've been in a lot of courtrooms. You've won a lot of arguments in your time. You know how to break through the white noise of media. The opening yesterday from the Democrats, from the two witnesses, give us your assessment.
Way too long, no common theme, lacked bullet points or punchiness. You know, I think that you've got to have kind of a beat you can dance to, a rhythm to these stories.
Had no cadence.
You saw a waterfall of words come out of the Democrat witnesses, and I think most Americans living their lives looked at all that and it just looked like a bunch of wonky Washington people trying to make their particular viewpoint heard.
Schiff and these guys are smart guys. Why did they allow that to happen?
Because they become sort of obsessed with their own narrative. You know, if politicians have a weakness, it's our own narcissism and our own belief that everyone will hang on our words and the words that we craft for others.
Okay, talking about cadence, yesterday one of the killers that was put on there, Jim Jordan, I know we call the killers is Lee Zeldin, Mark Meadows, Congressman Gates, and Jim Jordan. Let's go to the clip, Raheem. Can we play
Let's play clip two. Clip two shows Jim Jordan in full effect yesterday
full
in the public
Jordan.
Hearings.
Ambassador, you weren't on the call, were you? The president, you didn't listen on President Trump's call and President Zelensky's call?
I did not.
You've never talked with Chief of Staff Mulvaney?
I never did.
You never met the president?
That's correct.
You had three meetings again with Zelensky and it didn't come up.
And two of those they had never heard about as far as I know.
And President
there was no reason for
and
it
President
to come
Zelensky
up.
Never made an announcement. This is what I can't believe. And you're their star witness. You're their first witness.
Mr.
You're
Jordan.
The guy. You're the guy based on this. Based on, I mean, I've seen church prayer chains that are easier to understand than this. Ambassador.
it was the best moment. I may get that entire transcript just tattooed on my back this afternoon. It was so good. But look, I think that what you see there is blowing a hole in the Democrats' case because they are unable to establish a factual predicate with evidence that would be admissible in any court, in any forum, that you'd be taken serious.
But you're a lawyer, but you're also you understand modern media. Jordan has two things there. It's not just the questions. It's the cadence of it and the drama of it and knowing how to work it and pull it out. Don't we need more of that?
Well, Jordan prepares as much as anyone in the Congress. He's our most talented member, and he's the one that works the hardest. So obviously his performance is the best. I mean, and I think that you're right. Like, most Americans are not going to consume these moments by sitting through 4 or 5 hours of testimony. They're going to consume them in digestible bites. What were the Democrats' best digestible bites yesterday? This notion that somebody overheard a cell phone conversation from across at a restaurant. Most Americans see this Ukraine dispute as something unfamiliar, far away, foreign. But I think every American knows that you cannot swear on a stack of Bibles that you are absolutely certain of what you heard off of somebody else's cell phone in a restaurant.
Let's just talk about the bomb. That was the bombshell from yesterday. Was there, let me ask you a question. How is it, it stretches credulity that his chief political advisor to Ambassador Tam would only – they only approached him on Friday on a call that took place – I think it was in July or August.
After his testimony – after his testimony was released.
You've seen evidence and they're only going to have him back to the Star Chamber, which is going to kick off again here and now with an OMB guy and this guy on Friday. Didn't they owe it to the American people to at least get the guy in, depose him over the weekend, and then allow that to be brought up? I mean, what kind of scam are they trying to run here?
Well, this is the type of thing that I think the American people just see through. I think the Democrats are way overplaying their hand, believing that they can fashion evidence where it doesn't truly exist. And I think that's what you see. You likely had some bright minds advising Democrats saying, if all that's going to happen in these public hearings is a reliving of the transcripts that have already been released, all of the headlines will be nothing new, no bombshell, no anything. And so I think they really had to scurry around and sort of go through the rummage sale of ideas to fashion out this new bombshell.
But now they move on to their insurance policy, which is going to be emotion, which is going to be Marie Yovanovitch, yes, getting up there and going, I felt threatened.
She's going to cry. There'll be tears.
There will be tears. I felt sad. I was abused. I was put in this terrible position and then fired as a result.
You think this
of
is to get the meme of Trump, the misogynist, of Trump? This is what they're playing for the college-educated woman, that this is purely going to be an emotion tomorrow.
Well, we have just such a good, I think, counter to that. I think that Taylor and Kent both said repeatedly yesterday that an ambassador can be called for any reason, and it's entirely mm-hmm. appropriate. So how I would structure that as the Republicans, I would directly quote Taylor and Kent to Yovanovitch, and I would say, Ambassador Yovanovitch, is Mr. Taylor wrong? Is Mr. Kent wrong? Or are they right? And sort of juxtapose what they've said about the presidential powers on
Ambassador. But she'll say, yeah, but they didn't have to bully me at the same time. They could have just fired me. I mean, weep.
This is politics. We don't pitch underhand.
Not coach pitch. Congressman, very important. So in addition to former Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, who will be on the Hill in a public hearing tomorrow, we're also going to have the eavesdropper, as Raheem has named him, David Holmes. And this is the aide that overheard the cell phone call and magically seems to know everything that's going on between President Trump and Gordon Sondland based on this supposed overheard call. If you're in the room, what kind of questions do we need to be asking the eavesdropper, David Holmes, who just magically now remembers this phone call?
Yeah, I mean, I would not allow Holmes to talk around what he believed he heard. I think the key questioning has to drill down on the precise words that were heard, the precise order, the duration of time between the hearing of those words. And I think that when you do that, you will expose this not as an individual who I think had a clear understanding of what was being said, but someone who was trying to fill in the blanks.
Is it also important of when he notified the ambassador?
Sure.
How could it possibly be in this length of time, given that the whole world's been galvanized, particularly on Taylor's, his opening statement and what was
leaked? What have you been doing the last few weeks would be a question with this information.
Yeah, months.
Where do we stand with, we're going to go to a short commercial break here in a moment, but I want to ask you, where do we stand right now with getting more of the killers up there on the thing? Is this a fight? We had Mark Meadows here the other day. This is about defending the President of the United States, about defending this movement, and personalities and feelings got to be put aside.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Majority Leader has only put Mr. Jordan on the Intelligence Committee. I think that also Lee Zeldin and Mark Meadows, having been in the transcribed interviews, having been in the Star Chamber, they have an understanding of the witnesses, the body language, the particular points of discomfort for the witnesses that would be very helpful to us. And I think that, you know, members who have already announced their retirement from the Congress would be ideal candidates to maybe be looking at the next chapter in their lives. Not that they haven't done great work, not that they're not great intelligence analysts, but this is not intelligence work. This is impeachment work, and we need to field the A-team. The presidency deserves no less than the best defense that we can offer against this bullshit.
You know, they said yesterday, Mark Meadows sat in this chair 2 days ago and said only a half a dozen congressmen had actually gone through and read the transcripts. So people like yourself, Zeldin, et cetera. We got to jump to a commercial break. We're going to return with the strategist firebrand Matt Gaetz when we return on War Room Impeachment in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
War Room Impeachment from the basement of the Breitbart Embassy on Capitol Hill. This is episode 28. I want to announce we are going to have a special edition at 5 o'clock this afternoon on the John Frederick Radio Network Live. We're going to have Chris Ruddy, the chairman and CEO of Newsmax, will be on. And other, we're going to talk about polling this afternoon, Raheem. Jason Miller will probably be on assignment. Episode 28, we've got Congressman Matt Gaetz, the firebrand that really broke the fever 3 weeks ago that has now forced Nancy Pelosi's hand. You got two master strategists there moving pieces on the chessboard. We've got some great news that came out yesterday. I want to turn to Jason. We've got some augmentation of the great team in the White House to work with Stephanie Grisham and the folks over there. Do you want to talk about Tony and Pam?
Yeah, and so news came out yesterday that it's formalized, it's locked in, that Tony Saig, who used to be the lead spokesman at Treasury, and Pam Bondi, of course, the former attorney general from the state of Florida, which Congressman Gaetz is obviously good friends with, they have both officially joined the White House team, working under and reporting to Stephanie Grisham, the comms director at the White House. So they're adding to the existing team. They're getting some more hands on deck. We love this news. We think this is great. We think these are people.
The reason the folks in the White House have a full-time job is running the country. I mean, you saw yesterday right. with Turkey. This is a big, you know, the president's got USMCA. He's got Hong Kong. He's got China. He's got things are going on in Syria. It's a full-time job. You know Pam Bondi pretty well.
We're going
to
win more days than we lose with Pam Bondi helping to craft the communication strategy and out there taking our case to the American people. And also, Pam Bondi, I think, is not permanent Washington. You know, she comes from a dynamic state, and I think that that's going to be an interesting contrast
and an AG too.
You know, to these folks who are so wedded to the ways of this town.
She's a heavy-duty lawyer. Okay, we got a couple minutes left. By the way, we're going live on Monday. We're going to be on the Salem Radio Network at 9 o'clock, the morning show. The John Fredericks radio show.
And Steve, tell folks what that is. I mean, this is huge.
Salem Radio is the largest. Conservative radio network in the country. Top quality talent, some of the best voices in talk radio, and we're honored to be joining that. I want to thank the John Fredericks Radio Network. We're up on Stitcher. We're up on iTunes. The downloads have been amazing. And here's it. We're just trying to lay out information every day and have people like Congressman Gaetz on. We only got a couple minutes left. Nancy Pelosi, where does she try to take this, and what is the counter?
Nancy Pelosi has a management problem this morning because you're starting to see moderate Democrats like Anthony Brindisi and others that are in tough races talking to their pollsters, talking to their consultants, and they're running back to the Democratic leadership now saying, you know, how long is this going to go on? What have you got us in for, and when can I get off of this roller coaster? Every Democratic consultant out there would rather be talking about health care than impeachment, and if they're talking about impeachment, they're crowding out what they believe might be their best message.
That was the 31 districts that flipped back to the Democrats. She told them specifically, never mention the I word. Talk about health care. Talk about jobs. Talk about the economy. Talk about national security. Don't talk about this. Now, their forcing function has forced this on them. Okay, Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, want to thank Congressman Gaetz, one of the great young strategists. We'll have him back hopefully next week on the concentrated when Nancy Pelosi brings, what, 8-10 people to testify?
8 as of right now.
I think 8 of right now, probably more. Stephen K. Bannon, War Room Impeachment, with a special edition at 5 o'clock today with Chris Ruddy. Raheem Kassam will be joining me.
War Room.